This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We heard earlier today from President Biden speaking from the White House about what is happening in Afghanistan. The Taliban has taken control of the country's capital now, Kabul. Chaos has followed, thousands of Afghans flooding the city's airport as American troops continue to evacuate U.S. government staff and allies. Let's go now to Saeed Khan, senior lecturer in Near East and Asian Studies and director of Global Studies at Wayne State University in Detroit. Saeed, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me back.
What did you make of what we heard this afternoon from President Biden?
Well, I think President Biden made a statement that probably should have been made 15 years ago, that the American mission that, of course, began 20 years ago in the aftermath of the terrorist bombings or attacks on 9/11 had run its course. If the mission really was to neutralize al-Qaeda, or to bring it into a containable fashion, that had been done. The last 15 years, unfortunately, were not only superfluous, but have led to the kind of reaction that we find to what otherwise should have been a well-received admission by President Biden to finally put an end to this particular campaign.
That's the long-term approach to the problem. But right now, this last weekend, the sudden collapse in Afghanistan and the scramble in a lot of ways to get Americans and others out of the country, that's where a lot of blame is being pointed at the Biden administration. What do you think about that? Is this blame justified?
Part of it is justified. Part of it is a miscalculation on the ability of the Kabul government of President Ashraf Ghani, or now former President Ashraf Ghani, as he has fled the country, to be able to then have the stability, not only politically, but also militarily, to repel the Taliban. The speed by which the Taliban were able to then take not only substantial territory, but also infiltrate Kabul, seems to have caught the Biden administration and, quite frankly, everybody off guard. And that then has led to the kind of chaotic scenes that we see not only at Kabul airport, but the sense of true urgency by which we now have to scramble to evacuate our citizens and our diplomats from Afghanistan.
And Saeed, what happened with this abrupt collapse? The United States has been investing in trying to build an effective Afghan military and an effective Afghan government, and that seems all to have withered away just in the course of really a couple of weeks.
It has, and part of that has to do with the fact that, again, too much entrustment and maybe a combination of naivete and a bit of hubris that the United States was capable of nation building or nation rebuilding with putting our faith in certain actors who clearly did not have the shoulders to be able to handle that. And at the same time, a flaw that the United States makes, unfortunately, again and again, and that is to simply pretend as though the Taliban were not going to be a force in Afghan politics and society moving forward. That was a realization which was addressed far too late with the Doha talks in Qatar with the United States and the Taliban at the end of the prior Trump administration. But again, that was really too little too late. We really miscalculated and we misread what were the tectonic plates on the ground. The military that we trained in Afghanistan were clearly dissatisfied with the government. The government was not providing them either financial or logistical support, and perhaps feeling demoralized that they were propping up a government that showed its corruption. They were willing to yield because they felt as though they shouldn't put their lives on the hands or in the way of the Taliban advances.
The great tragedy here, of course, for the Afghan people at war, effectively since the late 1970s and the Soviet invasion. And now the Taliban are back in charge. What does this mean for the people of Afghanistan?
Well, I think what it's going to mean is still an open question, of course. One of the big tragedies over the last, whether you want to call it 22 years or even 42 years, is the lack of ability for the Afghan people to have a kind of stability. Now, the one qualification that could, in fact, emerge here, and I know a lot of people, of course, are fearful that with the return of the Taliban, there will be the return of al-Qaeda and extremism. And this is something that, of course, is making the circuit inside Washington by those who are opportunistic enough. But we have to recognize that this time around, we have other players in the region, particularly China and also Russia. And given the kind of investments that both of these countries have made, particularly China with its Belt and Road Initiative, it's very unlikely that China will accept the Afghan territory to become then a safe haven for extremism yet again, for two reasons. One, because they don't want Western ambition to refocus on Afghanistan. And for the second reason, because it's bad for business. And so I think what we're going to find is that there's going to be a Taliban, which unfortunately may still bring with it its social and cultural norms. But at the same time, when it comes to American national security interests and fear of extremism, that may not be on the table this time around.
Saeed, thanks again for joining us today.
Anytime. Thank you.
That's Saeed Khan, senior lecturer in Near East and Asian Studies and director of global studies at Wayne State University in Detroit. He's with us today to talk about the chaos unfolding in Afghanistan and this afternoon's speech from President Biden. More to come here on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. Coming up tomorrow at 8 on The Morning Show, it's this week's edition of Ask a Contractor. An electrician gives advice and answers to your questions. That's tomorrow morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. Now, we don't always appreciate what we have until later. And that could be the case when it comes to things like extracurriculars and hobbies you might have felt forced to do when you were a child. Was there a thing you were made to do or practice by parents, teachers, whoever it might be, that you look back now and you really feel grateful for doing? A musical instrument, say, a foreign language? On the flip side, is there something you wish you would have learned or been introduced to when you were young? We want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. Tell us about something you learned as a kid that you're grateful for now and what it taught you. Or tell us what you wish you would have learned as a kid. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Gretchen Rubin is the author of several books, including The Happiness Project and The Four Tendencies. She co-hosts a podcast called Happier with Gretchen Rubin. She tweeted asking if your parents could have forced you to learn something, what do you wish you'd learned? Gretchen, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks very much. I'm so happy to be talking to you.
What got you thinking about this idea, Gretchen?
Well, you know, I think for many of us, we think of learning something in our childhood with our parents making us as kind of this effortless accumulation of knowledge. Well, it wasn't effortless when we were a child, but now as adults, we look back and we think, gosh, I wish my parents had made me learn how to play guitar because I wish I could play guitar now. Now, would we have said that as a child? I don't know, but we wish we had learned it in the past.
Having been a child and a parent, I don't think of it as very easy. I know it could be a battle to do this. It's not always easy. Is there something that stands out in your own story, Gretchen, that you learned and were glad or wish you'd learned in hindsight?
Well, the two things my parents made me learn that I am so grateful for, I didn't particularly resist, but I knew I didn't have an option. One was to learn to swim, which I'm very happy that I know how to swim, and also to learn to type, which, of course, now is such an essential thing. Now, what I wish I knew how to play is I wish I knew how to play guitar, but I have no aptitude for it, and I'm sure I would have been quite resistant. So I understand why they didn't push that one. They got me started, but they didn't push too hard.
You know, my dad made me learn to type. Really glad about that in hindsight. Yeah. Piano lessons they made me do, and I'm glad, and I stuck with music in various forms. All right, I don't know if I was going to admit this one, but I'll admit it. I was a really stubborn kid. And if I wasn't good at something, it was really easy for me to give up on. And in some cases, my parents gave up. Are you ready? Riding a bike. They tried when I was a kid. I hated it. I just put my foot down, or actually, I think I probably just sat down on the ground, didn't do it. They gave up, and I never learned. And I wish I'd learned. Can you believe it? I could have done it. They could have tried again. I don't know. That's the one stubborn Rob didn't pay off.
Have you ever thought about trying to learn now?
Oh, I've been encouraged by friends and radio colleagues for years. I'm way more brittle than I was when I was five. It would be way more dangerous. So I don't. Well, yeah. So that one, I guess I'd have to pick as that in foreign languages. I wish I'd done.
Well, you know, and I think foreign language is sort of a special case. Maybe bike riding is a little bit the same, where we think of it as being something that would have been so much easier, especially for very young children, where they almost effortlessly will pick up that second or third language. And so that really does feel like a missed opportunity, yeah. Because for an adult, or even for, you know, a child, you know, in middle school or grade school or high school, it's just not the effortless, and then you never can kind of have that perfect accent that maybe you can as a child. So that really does feel like something where a window closes and you wish your parents had helped make that happen.
Well, let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Gretchen Rubin is with us from the Happiness Project, asking the question, what's something you wish your parents had made you learn, or what's something you're glad your parents or teachers or whoever made you learn? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Helen joins us now in Appleton. Helen, hi.
Hello. Something that I think about so often, as do my siblings. I come from a family of 8 children, and my mother sang in the choir, and she played piano beautifully. Mm. And I remember as a young child reaching up and pounding on those keys, thinking that one of these days I'm going to learn. And I think she was certainly overwhelmed with all these children, but none of us learned how to play piano. And it's something that I wished I had learned, but we all grew up with a real great appreciation for music. We all love music.
Did you go on to learn any instrument, Helen, along the way?
No, I didn't. And something that, you know, I mean, like violin, I thought, oh, I would love to take violin with the young children. So I didn't feel like I wasn't going to be able to catch on, like the Suzuki method or something like that. I can't read music, so that's always kept me away from something like that. But we certainly all just love music. We always have the radio going or whatever. So it's just something that I think about my parents quite often about that.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us today, Helen. I appreciate it. And Gretchen, I was looking at responses to your tweet about this. Musical instruments, we've both mentioned it, Helen mentioned it, very common answer.
Yes, many, many people wish that they had learned to play the piano, the violin, the flute, the guitar. You know, and you think, well, I could do this as an adult, but very often we don't.
Thanks, Helen, for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Gretchen Rubin about the things we wish we'd learned or been forced to learn as kids, or the things we're glad our parents threw at us. You can join in with yours at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Gretchen, what were some of the other common answers you got when you asked about this?
Well, many people wish that they had learned to play a particular sport, like they wish they'd learned how to play tennis or golf. One thing I was surprised was I thought maybe more people would say that they wish that their parents had taught them how to cook. But I didn't see that many answers. But many people did say something like, I wish my parents had taught me self-discipline, or my parents had taught me mindfulness. So that's a little bit different. I was thinking very much about sort of skills, but they were thinking more kind of even bigger than a skill, but a mindset or an aptitude. But many people wish that they had that more of that growing up.
Well, we asked around our Central Time team. Natalie, one of our producers here, was in 4-H for 10 years, and she says it felt like a lot of work. The projects were stressful, especially in the summer when it's hard to be disciplined. But she says, along the lines of what you were just talking about, Natalie looks back and thinks it may have gotten her started in developing a work ethic and working independently. So that's one road to some of those, I guess, less tangible skills that you were just mentioning.
Yeah. And, you know, but I think that there is kind of the opposite side. And I think about this myself. My parents very much, they didn't force me, but they very much encouraged me to play sports. And I have no aptitude for sports. I have like negative sports ability, but I did it. And my school was the kind of school where like everyone sort of got to sit on the bench. And I think, well, I learned a lot about teamwork and I learned about humility and I got exercise and it was fun in some ways. But there is also an opportunity cost. What might I have done with that time if I hadn't been playing sports? Maybe I would have done something that would have been more suitable to me. And so as a parent, I know you experience this as a parent and a child. As a parent, I often think, well, I don't always know what my children should be doing with their time. And so maybe I need to let them be guided by their own preferences as well, and not just impose what I think that they should be doing.
Sure.
Because it's hard. It takes a lot of time to learn to play piano. Maybe you want to, like Helen wanted to, but for somebody else, they might make better use of that time if they were free to do so.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. John is with us in Eau Claire. John, hi.
Hey, I had a regret I didn't do, and then an item that I'm thankful for. So the item that I was thankful for was I had exposure with dairy operations and maintenance, kind of growing up on a dairy farm.
Oh, yeah.
And it really ignited my my interest in all things mechanical, and I went down. I'm an engineer now.
Cool. What was your regret, though?
You know, one thing, just kind of like watching as time goes by and the different tech, I wish I would have been more exposed to computer science as a child. That would have been probably the – I always think there's – you're either in front of the UI or behind the user interface of the computer. So it's like I really wish I had a little bit more comprehension of computer language, things like that.
John, thanks a lot for sharing that. Gretchen, it's hard to know, as you're saying, as a parent, what's the thing that is going to be right for a kid. So John, dairy inspired him in his career of engineering. I don't know. If I'm busy running a dairy farm, am I going to teach my kid to code, though?
Right. And I think this is a good example of maybe at one time people would have thought, oh, why would a kid spend all their time coding? Like, what's up with that? And then it's like, ooh, turns out that's a good thing to know. Like, my sister now is a very successful TV writer. And I remember her saying to me very seriously last year, you know, I just wish I'd watched more TV as a kid, because now that's very useful to her. But at the time, of course, nobody thought it was a good idea to spend your time that way. So we don't always know what's good preparation.
Thanks a lot for that call. John, we'll go to Ryan now in De Pere. Ryan, hello.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about Ryan?
Well, growing up, I grew up in a family with four children, and we weren't always in very high income, but my parents always pushed us to try to do something outside of school. All of us were enrolled in sports and things like that. And I hated the sports side. It's never been my forte. I've always been the tall, lanky kid. So they tried everything they could. Wrestling, basketball, baseball wasn't my thing. But they had me try all these different things. And finally, they found music. I was actually in the Green Bay Boy Choir for 10 years. And it, with my parents pushing me to try these different things, it taught me to seek out and try things in life. Even if you're not sure if you're going to like it, just go and try it. And I don't have any, my job doesn't specifically cater to any of the things that my parents had me try, but in my jobs that I've worked over the years, I've always tried to learn everything there is about them, because my mother pushed me to try everything there is.
I love it, Ryan. Thanks a lot. Yeah, I like that approach, and that's kind of how I try it as a parent, Gretchen. I'm not going to commit my kids to 12 years of piano or soccer, though they did stick with soccer, but getting them exposed to lots of different things and finding the one that they're going to pursue. What do you think of Ryan's experience?
I think that's very true. I think it's great to have to be exposed to a wide variety of things. I will say that I what I always wonder is, when do you really encourage / push someone to persist? Because you think, well, once you get good enough, something becomes more fun, but maybe it's not fun at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And the question is, how long do you have to persist? And that can be tricky, but whether it's you yourself or it's a child that you're dealing with, like, how long do you insist that somebody give it a try before they can evaluate whether it's something they want to continue? It can be hard to tell.
I have not to solve that question for myself or my kids. Thanks, Ryan. Yeah. Christine joins us next in Madison. Christine, hi.
Hi. The thing that I want to bring up is Spanish. I switched schools in sixth grade, and I had to start taking Spanish every day until I graduated high school. And at first, it was so hard. I was so behind. And I just hated it. But since then, I've studied abroad in Chile and Mexico. I got a fellowship in Panama.
Wow.
And I travel around Latin America all the time, and I teach English as a second language. And a lot of my students are Spanish speakers. So it's really opened up doors for me personally and to see the world and for my career, too.
And Christine, when was the tipping point from I hate it, this is hard, to yeah, I'm into this?
I would say it probably took me a good 2 or 3 years.
Wow.
Because I was so behind. I just, I felt I was a good student, so I didn't like being behind my peers. But once I caught up, then it started to be a little bit more fun.
Christine, thanks a lot for that call. I really appreciate it. Gretchen, you know, I've started to try to learn Spanish on one of those free apps. Won't say I've learned it, but I'm trying. Do you have thoughts on when we can, as adults, go back and say, you know, I'm still going to try that thing that I should have tried at age 5 or 12 or whatever?
Well, I think we can try it anytime. And I think it can be extremely exciting and energizing as an adult to go back and pick up a skill that we wish that we had acquired along the way. You know, something like gardening. Maybe you were bored silly by it when your grandfather tried to get you to help garden. But then, you know, you turn 55 and somehow the gardening gene kicks in and now it's all you want to learn about. So I think it's never too late, and that people really often are made much happier when they, you know, we're happy when we are in an atmosphere of growth, when we feel like we're growing and learning, and it can be really powerful.
It's a great place to leave it. Gretchen, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thank you.
That's Gretchen Rubin, author of a lot of books, including The Happiness Project and The Four Tendencies. She's co-host of the podcast Happier with Gretchen Rubin. Thanks for your calls about the things you wish you'd learned or did learn as a kid that you were glad you learned. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, we'll look at the latest news from Afghanistan and decisions by the Trump and Biden administrations to withdraw U.S. troops after 20 years. And we'll meet the director of Wisconsin's State Park System with answers to your questions and comments. That and more tomorrow on Central Time. Last week on Food Friday, our guest shared his love of canned seafood of all shapes and sizes, or tinned seafood, he called it. A lot of you called in to share some of your favorite examples and what you like to do with them. And some more of you joined the conversation over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Here are some of your responses. Vicky wrote, "When I was in college, my great-grandmother gave me a cookbook for Christmas called Cooking with Canned Seafood the Natural Way." Vicky says, "The title has always made me snicker, but she was certainly onto something. Another grandmother ate canned sardines daily on the advice of her doctor for extra calcium to help slow her osteoporosis." Deborah tells us, "My late husband loved carrying canned sardines and crackers in his backpack for trail snacking." But Deborah says, "I can't say I ever cooked with canned fish." Raleigh wrote, "All shark sardines are the best I've ever had. I just eat them straight from the tin." I looked those up. They're from Morocco, apparently. And Raleigh is on the same page as our guest on Food Friday. He was happy to just eat them right out of the can, or maybe just on a piece of bread or some crackers. And Jennifer wrote, "I used a small dollop of anchovy paste in stews and tomato-based sauces." A pretty common use for a lot of these tinned seafoods. You can keep telling us your favorite canned seafood products. Tweet us at Central Time WPR or email ideas@WPR.org. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.